Hi, and welcome to the Conservative Roots Podcast. Today is Monday, September 6th, 2021. I'm your host, Robert. Hope everybody had a nice Labor Day weekend, got to celebrate a little bit. Or maybe if you're lucky, you got the day off today too. Maybe you got some burgers on the grill tonight. Who knows? I had a good weekend. I spent some time with my dad. So back at it here on Monday. I'm once again trying to play catch up on the news. So I'm going to pick through a bunch of stories out there, let you know my take on them, why I think they're important or worth noting out of the thousands of stories that we have right now, kind of overloading our nerves. I mean, I get online, I start going to some of the sites that I trust, you know, some of the more right-leaning sites and everything. And it's overwhelming because you'll look at something, 5 minutes later, it's gone. It's been replaced by something else. Updated stories. There's so many topics out there now that are absolutely important, not just in the United States, it's worldwide. All this, especially with the COVID stuff, it's happening worldwide. There's worldwide agendas happening now. And it's unbelievable. It's so hard to keep up with everything. So I'm just going to do my best to pick through some things that I think are important. Today, the big topic is going to be what's going on in Afghanistan again, but I'm going to try to give you a bit of a different spin on one of the things that I think was important the other day. It was like a week-old story, but I think it's key. I'll try to make things a little bit more interesting. And then, of course, we have to keep talking about the way that the deep state is trying to take over using COVID, because I think we've got some sinister plans in the works again. Couple of developments, couple of things I'm seeing out there that we're going to have to keep our eye on. Now, for those of you that follow me on TikTok, you may have seen that I didn't post a video for a couple of days, and I was making them, but when I went to post them, they were instantly shadow banned. I could see that I uploaded it, nobody else could see them, so maybe they didn't like the subject, I don't know. What has me baffled is the technology that they're using to censor. I know that they can instantly ban a video based on hashtags. You know, they'll have like a banned hashtag. So that makes sense. But I made sure to use very safe, very generic ones. And still, the thing was taken down. Not taken down, it just couldn't be seen by anybody. I think now they're even able to scan an image. Like if you put up a headline or something like that, I think that they can read it somehow. But even that had me a little bit baffled because I was covering the same types of things as other people. I saw similar stories, so I don't know. I tried putting a cover page. I tried changing the length a little bit. No dice. And this has been happening more and more. I made some great informative little clips. They were fun to do, but they were shadow banned. I had another couple videos taken, you know, permanently off. Which it's frustrating because, you know, you put the work into it and you try to do the best you can, and then again, the big tech censorship comes in and silences you. So here's what I decided to do. Every single video that I make for TikTok is also going to go up on my Patreon page. Two reasons. First, the ones that get removed or shadow banned, they're still going to be available at least for people to see someplace. I don't know where else to put it. Patreon seems to be the best place. Second, I know a lot of people hate TikTok and would never ever join it. Like no matter what. I mean, I didn't like it either. This is where people are though. It's a good way to reach people. It's a good way to promote myself. I don't like the idea of being on that app as much as anybody else, but I kind of have to do it. By having all the videos on the Patreon, it gives people a chance to check in, see little news clips and interesting stuff without having to have a TikTok account. So I think that's a good idea too for all the people that are just like, nope, no way, I'm not joining. I'm going to leave all of these videos up every time I make one from now on, and I'm going to leave it on the very, very basic support level of $3. I think it's $3 a month. So if that interests you, it's Conservative Roots Podcast on Patreon. At least you'll get to see all of that stuff for free. Well, not for free, $3 a month, a cup of coffee. I think it's fun to do these too because I can pick a topic, I can pick a subject and spend 90 seconds, 2 minutes on it, you know, cover any topic like that that maybe I wouldn't cover on here or on a longer format. I can just do something quick. I go over videos from overseas. I do a lot of stuff from like Australia and France and England and stuff like that. So, you know, it's fun to do. Anyway, let's jump into some Joe Biden news. Now, this story isn't new, but I think this story had some of the biggest implications and possible, let's call them potential problems for Joe in the future. And I'm talking about his call with the Afghan president. This call, this story, it's really connected to absolutely everything that happened in Afghanistan, from our citizens being left behind to our troops being killed, to our equipment being left there and taken. And yet, if you notice, you don't hear much about it already. So many things are happening every single day that a story that should be front and center just becomes lost with all the others. I mean, it gets buried in the dozens or hundreds of headlines that pop up every day. This is how people are getting away with things, the overwhelming number of news stories in the cycle. Headlines that had people like foaming at the mouth a week ago, they're already gone. They're completely out of people's minds. They're on to the next thing, and I can't blame them for that. But sometimes, you know, things that are maybe a little bit more important than they seemed at first kind of slip past, and I think that this is one of them. Now, for weeks, Biden was telling us in interviews on the news that Afghanistan was going to go smoothly. He rejected any idea that the Taliban was going to take over Kabul or Afghanistan in general. He made it sound like the Afghan army was doing great. He insinuated that they had the full protection of U.S. air cover. They were 300,000 strong versus 75,000. And that he'd been briefed by the military intelligence and all was well. This was going to be a smooth withdrawal that was long overdue and that the Afghanistan government and army were in control of the country. This is the message that he put out to the world. Now, behind the scenes, he cut out the air support for the Afghan army and also a lot of the supply chains. So they were not getting the supplies that they need, not getting the cover, the ammunition, etc., and they started to suffer great losses to the Taliban. Biden knew this. The Pentagon knew this. The Taliban started to make huge territory gains. And again, Biden knew this early on. But he went on interview after interview and got lobbed softball questions about the situation, and he assured everyone that things were going great, going okay. Now here's some excerpts from the call between Biden and the president of Afghanistan back then, Ashraf Ghani. It starts with Biden. "You know, I'm a moment late, but I mean it sincerely. Hey, look, I want to make it clear that I'm not a military man any more than you are, but I have been meeting with our Pentagon folks and our national security people, as you have with ours and yours. And as you know, and I need not tell you, the perception around the world and in parts of Afghanistan, I believe, is that things aren't going well in terms of the fight against the Taliban. And there's a need, whether it's true or not, there is a need to project a different picture. In other words, the Taliban is winning. The Taliban is advancing. The world is starting to ask questions. We need to have you go along with our lie that everything is great. We're also going to continue to make sure your Air Force is capable of continuing to fly and provide air support. In addition to that, we're going to continue to fight hard, diplomatically, politically, economically, to make sure your government not only survives, but is sustained and grows, because it is clearly in the interest of the people of Afghanistan that you succeed and you lead." Now Ghani responds, "Mr. President, we are facing a full-scale invasion composed of Taliban, full Pakistani planning and logistical support, and at least 10 to 15,000 international terrorists, predominantly Pakistanis, thrown into this, so that the dimension needs to be taken account of." He goes on and asking for more air support, to front load that, for money to pay for troops who haven't had a raise in 10 years, but mostly it's the air support. Attacks on our part have been weak. He's asking for real help from the air. Instead, we cut that off, and the Taliban, along with thousands of others, took over swiftly. I mean, look at what Ghani says. We're facing a full-scale invasion. 10 to 15,000 international terrorists. Help from Pakistan. This is so much larger than just the Taliban. Remember how a day after Kabul fell, we saw Bin Laden's old security guy from Al-Qaeda being driven around, right? And we knew this. Day one when this happened, I put out a video saying that I don't trust what we're seeing. Don't trust this narrative that nobody saw this coming. We're being lied to. And I mean, I wasn't the only one. I'm just saying. And now look, a month or more before it happened, there's the phone call to prove that it was all a lie and Biden had advanced knowledge that Kabul was going to fall. Now, when Circle Back Saki was pressured by the press about this call, she said, "It's pretty clear. I'm not going to go into details of a private conversation." Oh, now it's a private conversation. That's kind of interesting. Does anybody remember when Trump was impeached for his private conversation he had with the Ukrainian President Zelensky? That prompted Trump to release the entire call, the entire transcript, so he could counter the media's firestorm. And it was a firestorm. You couldn't turn on the news without them bitching about this phone call, right? That call with Trump and Zelensky was 1,000 times less than this. This is a president asking for a cover-up of reality, promising things to the president of Afghanistan that never materialized. This shows that literally everything that Joe Biden was and is saying to the media is a complete lie. And virtually no firestorm, no media firestorm, no pushback from our feckless, ridiculous Republicans. Nobody. I mean, go back in time and remember how the Democrats were salivating how they reacted with that Zelensky call. Demands of resignation, Hollywood celebrities going on Twitter 24/7, on and on and on, right? They went crazy with it. They impeached him over that. But this call? No. For some reason, nobody needs to take a deep look into this. Nothing to see here. Republicans went out, did their duty for a couple of days, making noise, you know, shaking their rattles. Now it's all but forgotten. The left? They're organized. They solidified their position. They handed out the narrative to every operative. They went on the attack, and they didn't stop until they got an impeachment trial. Us? Some faint background cries, rabble, 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 you know, that's it. Mitch McConnell, who I think now we can fully agree is transformed fully into a turtle, he comes right out, warns everybody not to go hard against Biden. He said there's no way that we're going to be removing Joe Biden from office. Impeachment off the table. He believes the ballot box is the way to decide. Yeah, well, so did we in 2020 until we had that right to choose our representative was stolen from us. But it's just so telling that immediately McConnell tries to squash the importance of the story and make sure that no Republicans do anything about it. Now here's another reason that call and info are important. That call was leaked. Nobody knows who yet, but whoever leaked that call is no friend of Biden. Was it a white hat in military intelligence, somebody from the Pentagon, someone in Joe's inner circle who's absolutely fed up with all this failure? We don't know, but it appears that there's a mole inside the Biden administration, and obviously that's good for us. Quite frankly, the way that the world works now, it could also be somebody on their side. If they're preparing to take Joe out either by the 25th Amendment or just forcing him to resign, they could possibly start leaking inside information to make him look bad, to make him look impotent, to make him look like he's endangering the country, right? Force his hand, who knows? Maybe he wants out. I don't know what the answer is, but the one bit of info that we can cling to like gospel is that something isn't right here. That kind of information that just doesn't fall out of the sky, it doesn't get leaked. Somebody has to take a big personal risk to let that kind of info out. That phone call was very, very damning to the President of the United States. That kind of info doesn't just happen. Something isn't right. It hasn't been right since day one. And now this call confirms a lot of our suspicions. It doesn't reveal every detail or motive, whether it's a ploy to get back eventually, you know, militarily into the Middle East or Afghanistan, or to sign off Afghanistan to the Chinese who can invest in the country now, mine rare earth minerals, or maybe this is something much deeper. I don't know. What it isn't is a botched withdrawal. Everything that you saw was on purpose. Let's think along those lines for a second that this was on purpose. It starts with Biden and the military knowing ahead of time that they were on a timeline, right? That the Taliban was advancing. Let's say, just to make the math simple, they had a month. A month is forever in terms of military time. They can plan things in hours. Yet we're to believe hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans and allies were left behind, along with $85 billion in military vehicles and equipment, and the government pathetically scrubbed all that from their websites, right? Like as if that's not on a million other places that the info was already published and we're just suddenly going to forget that it was left there. It's just ridiculous. A month. They actually had a month to do this, and this is the best that they could do. No chance. Don't believe it. And listen to this. 2 days ago, Fox News did an interview with that woke chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley. He's got oh so many medals on his chest, right? So many. He's very accomplished and important. Let's see what he said. What you saw unfold with this non-combatant evacuation operation was one of the contingency plans, and there was an extensive amount of planning in this. I think a couple of things. One is the collapse of the Afghan army happened at a much faster rate and very unexpected, by pretty much everybody. And then with that is the collapse of the Afghan government. So that was definitely a surprise. But I will say that there was an awful lot of planning done. ROC drills, rehearsals, etc. And what you saw unfold with this non-combatant evacuation operation was one of the contingency plans. And the speed at which it was executed, the flow of the aircraft, we had planes taking off every 30 to 45 minutes or so. The first day it was clearly chaotic, no question about it. You saw that on video, etc. But within about 24 hours, that settled down and it became a much more orderly process. The security of HKIA was challenging to say the least, and we saw the bombing. But that would have happened no matter where it was. People talk about Bagram. Wherever there's a perimeter, if there's no outside force, if there's no Afghan force securing it, and there wasn't any, then there's going to be U.S. forces on the perimeter, on the edge. And they were doing what they were asked to do, which is to go out and screen and process people. Now this entire statement is a load of crap. A complete load of crap. Let's look at it. He says the collapse of the army happened faster than anyone expected. So you do admit that it was collapsing. Because Biden was telling the world that the Afghan army could defend itself independently and they outnumbered the Taliban 300,000 to 75,000, right? And they were among the most well-trained and the best-equipped armies anywhere. But now he's saying it happened faster than they thought. But then at the same time, there's that pesky call where the Afghan president is facing full invasion. So yes, I guess Milley is saying that despite Joe Biden's lies, they knew the Afghan army was in fact going to fall. And the speed didn't surprise them, believe me. We have eyes and ears on the ground. We have direct communication with the army. We have satellite images. We have intelligence. We monitor the Taliban's movements and their communications 24/7. The ridiculous statement that we were caught off guard should actually be insulting to every single American alive. He says at the end that we're processing people and screening them. No, they weren't. They were loading them up onto airplanes. There's reports all over the place that Afghanis who made it to the airport were just being tossed on the planes and hauled out, all the while our American citizens were being left behind. Now, before they even landed, there were plans in place to distribute them all around the country in swing states and in Republican districts with Rhino Never Trumpers. Imagine all of this big country to settle in, and these are the specific places that they're being sent to. It's almost like there was a plan behind all this. He continued, "So there's a lot of lessons learned, and I think we're going to have to go through that in a very systematic way. I know we are in the Joint Staff, I know Central Command will, and I'm sure the other departmental agencies will. From a military standing point, though, military planning standpoint, those plans were done in detail. There was an extensive amount of planning in this." Milley further stated that when the Afghan government and military collapsed, it forced a change of plans due to the permissive environment. So as far as the military planning standpoint goes, those plans were done in detail. There was an extensive amount of planning in this, and yet we managed to leave behind an airbase, hundreds of thousands of rifles, spy planes, airplanes, helicopters, all manner of military vehicles to the tune of $85 billion. We left behind thousands of American citizens and Afghani friends. I mean, this was extensive planning of the military in a month to have Iran reverse engineer our technology, to have Americans held as hostages. And all this, he still says, after we know it's a bunch of bunk and they had plenty of advanced warning. We know this because we heard our president talking about it on a phone call. All right, speaking of advanced warning, let's continue with that. The Americans left behind. Biden would get on TV and try to convince us that all Americans who wanted to leave have left. They didn't strand anybody, right? Psaki was big on that one day. And the number they gave lately was about 200 people. And when they got pressed, when they got confronted by the media a bunch of times, Biden and others got angry and they said that, well, we've been telling people to get out for a long time, which makes no sense. What you did do is tell the Afghan president and everybody there to lie about the situation and act like everything was safe and under control and the government wasn't going to fall and the army wasn't going to fall. You made it sound like Afghanistan was going to be in the hands of the Afghanis. But now because of your call that exposed the lies, we come to find out that Biden knew it was unsafe this whole time, but he didn't do anything about it. and he left people to find out too late that they needed to leave. So all of these reports of, oh, well, these are the Americans that wanted to stay. No, there are no Americans that wanted to stay. They weren't properly made aware of the actual situation on the ground is the problem. And when they did try to leave, many were turned around by the Taliban because your extensive, detailed military planning wasn't working well enough to secure the safe passage for them. Or you outright prevented them from doing their jobs and told them to stand down and not help. Now, we've been hearing for days now that the number of people left behind is like 100, 150, maybe 200 total, whatever. Yet somehow, sitting on a tarmac in northern Afghanistan waiting to take off are around 150 Americans, but they can't. Now, according to Biden, that would be everybody, right? Yet they're saying that there's hundreds more. Let's take this story from Breitbart. At least 500 Americans are reportedly stranded in Afghanistan, contradicting President Joe Biden's estimate of between 100 and 200, according to the AP on Sunday. Among those who believe Biden has miscalculated how many Americans remain trapped behind enemy lines includes Rep. Daryl Issa from California, who told the AP, "The number of U.S. citizens still there and wanting to leave is closer to 500, and if the family members of those trapped Americans are included, Issa believes the overall number could be as high as 1,000. Here's a story from the Daily Mail. Meanwhile, the U.S. military withdrawal from Kabul was completed a week ago, and efforts to rescue American citizens still stuck in Afghanistan has reached an impasse, with reports that six private charter planes sent there to evacuate at least 1,000 people have been grounded in an Afghan city 260 miles north of Kabul. The flights were chartered by Mercury One, a charity founded by right-wing commentator Glenn Beck, Newsweek reports. Beck's fleet of two Airbus 340s and four Boeing 737s from Cam Air are sitting empty in the city of Mazar-i-Sharif as their passengers, including at least 142 Americans. One NGO official told Newsweek that remaining passengers are special immigrant visa applicants and that everyone is waiting in their safe houses for clearance for takeoff from the Taliban amid the diplomatic stalemate. The evacuation flight reportedly cost Beck's charity $750,000 each. On Sunday, Reuters reported that the delay had been caused by Biden administration officials not telling Taliban leaders it had approved the departures of the chartered flights from Mazar-i-Sharif. An exasperated flight organizer hit out at the State Department over the fiasco, saying they need to be held accountable for putting these people's lives in danger. Other groups trying to organize their own chartered flights have also hit out that the State Department with Ricky Clay, is that a new expression, hit out? It's twice in this article. They have hit out that the State Department with Ricky Clay from private security firm Plan B claiming it's the only thing stopping him from fulfilling his brief. What an oddly written article. So we got military planning, 100 to 200 Americans left, even though 142 are sitting on a plane from Glenn Beck. And these flights can't leave because of our government didn't get involved in time. And now these flights are being held hostage. Also from the Daily Mail. As the situation developed over the weekend, Texas Rep. Michael McCaul told Fox News that the Taliban was now holding the planes hostage. "We have six airplanes at Mazar-i-Sharif Airport, six airplanes with American citizens on them as I speak, also with the interpreters, and the Taliban is holding them hostage for demands right now. The state has cleared the flights," okay, so that happened now, "and the Taliban will not let them leave the airport." McCaul went on to claim that the flights were being used by the Islamic extremist groups as a bargaining chip with the U.S. in return for full recognition of their newly formed government. Who didn't see that coming, right? Trump said it, I said it, you said it, everybody with a brain said it, anybody that was left behind was going to be used as a bargaining chip or a hostage, and here we are. Now, what's going on in Afghanistan? All of it. We don't know yet what the final outcome is going to be. What we do know is that we were lied to. We have the proof. There was agenda behind this. This wasn't just some misguided mishandling of a situation that caught us off guard. That's BS. We knew this was coming, and this is how we chose to handle it. All this has done is embolden our enemies, created a new situation where we might have to go back into war again, enriched and emboldened China, caused a vacuum of power that's only going to be filled by the worst of the worst. We allowed that. It weakened America. And you have to ask yourself, do the people who allow this to happen have our security and our interests in mind, or do they have somebody else's? All right, on to COVID. In the last podcast, we talked about infectious disease. I think it was the last one, maybe the one before, I'm not sure. But we talked about the Spanish flu and tuberculosis and how devastating all that was. And how far reaching into the population those diseases went. Some of these respiratory illnesses just don't go away so easily, no matter what we do or how much we'd like them to just leave our lives. It just doesn't work that way. Tuberculosis has been around for thousands of years, and well, it did most of its damage in the last few hundred years. Spanish flu, 50 to 100 million people dead, okay? The point is, everything that we have tried to do, masks, social distancing, lockdowns, vaccine, none of it is working. Look at Australia. What are they right now in their 10th lockdown? Now they're telling people that unless they get vaccinated, they're going to be denied healthcare. Imagine that. That's your modern day totalitarian Australia. Australia! Did anybody ever think that this would come to Australia? If you get into a car crash and you're not vaccinated, they're not going to help you. In Australia, it's get the jab or you can go to hell. And yet, they're trying to say it's all for safety. I mean, like, never mind the Israelis and the people in the UK losing the efficacy of the vaccine and the vaccinated are getting infected and hospitalized. All of that information doesn't matter. It's like Australia exists in a little bubble. Doesn't matter to Australia that the vast majority sick in Israel are fully vaxxed. None of it matters. Because those are facts. And they aren't dealing in facts, they're dealing in fear. If Australia, who barely has any cases or any deaths compared to the rest of the world, wants to get rid of corona, they would have to isolate every single man, woman, and child away from each other, probably for a year. No contact, nothing. Nobody would be able to be walking around outside. Nobody would be able to be having any contact with any other person. Then maybe it would die off. But obviously that's not realistic. It's not something that can be possible. And when they all came out of hiding, the first person to arrive from abroad would bring it all back again, okay? It's a Chinese bioweapon. It was made to spread. It was made to do what it is doing. And your vaccines aren't working. So now with the cases on the rise again, there are new calls for forcing vaccines somehow, for vaccine passports, and also we're seeing them call for more booster shots now. The huge push is on for vaccines now in the USA because of the Pfizer shot being given full approval. And I can already hear the screams, it's not been approved, it's not been approved. I hear you. All right, I hear you. What the FDA did was very clever and it was very tricky. We've been over this before. It bears repeating because it's important too. They sent out two letters, which is maybe unprecedented, right? They had a vaccine that had been given emergency use authorization and had testing slated to end in 2023, which is when the former head of the FDA said that they'd be given full approval. Biden comes in, replaces him with Janet Woodcock, and this little maneuver happens. They extend the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine on the emergency use platform. That's what everybody's saying. No, they just extended it. That is true. That's the one that's actually in stock and available in the United States, the one that everybody's been taking so far. Yes, all they did for that was extend the emergency use. In a second letter, they gave full approval to a vaccine that supposedly has the same ingredients, the same manufacturing guidelines, but won't be available in the United States for a long time. Okay, that's the Comirnaty. And so while the FDA now says the Pfizer jab is fully approved, it's the second vaccine, the Comirnaty, that was approved, but you can't get it. It's not made yet. There are no shots of it available in the United States anywhere. You cannot get it in America. So when you go out there filled with your newfound confidence, the FDA says that the drug is safe now, keep in mind, nothing has changed. You're still going to take the exact same vaccine that's been sitting on the shelves in stock from months ago. And oddly, those tests that were slated to end in 2023 to prove the vaccine is totally safe have now been pushed out to 2025 for the Comirnaty. Now why? Why is that? Not only that, they extended the no liability clause, so if you do get the jab and you get sick or something happens to you, you have a reaction, you die, you get blood clots, whatever, you still can't sue them. even though it's supposedly approved, because you're not taking Comirnaty, you're taking BioNTech, you're taking the emergency use vaccine, you're still taking that, and they extended the no liability. Because one version of the drug is legal, but this other one is still under emergency use authority, so you can take it and pretend it's the one that got approved. Which begs the question, if this is not legally or technically the same Comirnaty vaccine that was actually approved, why is the Secretary of Defense forcing our soldiers to take it? Aren't we supposed to wait for it to be manufactured and sent to us, the one that was actually given approval? Also, what recourse are people going to have who get sick now from the jab? None. What about our soldiers? None. It's the same one as before. Until we get new stock of the Comirnaty vaccine, you are still taking the Pfizer-BioNTech. And if you want one more plot twist, if you got the jab and you die within 14 days now, the CDC says that you were not vaccinated, and it's got nothing to do with the shot. So if you go get the shot, you have a terrible reaction, you die, whatever, you're on your own. You're on your own, camper. Your family's on your own, basically. Yeah, you're dead, so you're on your own, but your family's on your own. Nothing that they can do, because it's not related to the jab, according to the CDC. Just something to remember. Every government in the world right now is basically saying that the Delta variant is responsible for 99% of infections, okay? Even though they have really no way to prove that at all, that's just an assumption. When you go down to the drugstore, your doctor, or wherever for a COVID test, the test is just generic. In fact, it's not even accurate. It cannot tell you what COVID you have. But because they've sent samples to the CDC for testing, and a lot of them have come back as Delta, now they're just assuming it's everybody. That also at first gave them the excuse to push vaccines hard because, oh my gosh, the Delta variant is here, spreads much easier, you need the vaccine, it's sweeping through the country, everybody has Delta. Well, how do you know everybody has Delta? Well, we're just assuming it. We just know it is. What kind of science is that? But now they're seeing tons of people who've been fully vaccinated winding up infected. The CDC says that the efficacy is waning and that the fully vaxxed can catch and spread COVID as well as get sick and die from it. Although they say getting super sick and being hospitalized and dying is more rare. But this does present the problem. They're going to need an excuse for more shots, and it can't just be Delta. So it started a couple weeks ago or so. This is where the BS starts to roll in, and the timing and how you can see that this is actually an agenda. The CEO of Pfizer coming out and saying that although we haven't seen any yet, he predicts that pretty soon we're going to start seeing vaccine-resistant strains of COVID. 1 week later, and I think I did a video on this for TikTok maybe too, and I think that was banned. All of a sudden, the news cycle starts talking about a new strain out there called, C121 and another one, B1621. The B1621 was the one that they were most worried about being vaccine resistant and able to, I think they said, blow through the Pfizer jab. By the way, if you're wondering who won the vaccine wars, when was the last time you heard J&J or Moderna? Anyway, while the articles, which were all released on the same day within hours of each other, right, tons of them, they all made it seem like this was a brand new discovery. The variants were actually already months old. But now it was suddenly a story on every front page all over the world because a week ago this guy had planted the idea that there was going to be a new vaccine-resistant variant on the horizon, and now a week later, suddenly here they are. That's called planting the idea. A week later, they've given it an easier name, Mu, however you want to pronounce it, and it's back in the news again. An article in Newsweek is saying it's being found all over now in small amounts, but the states with the most cases so far are Alaska at 146, Hawaii, Connecticut, Maine, a few others. Fauci said in a White House COVID press briefing last weekend that the variant had mutations that suggest it would evade certain antibodies, including antibodies provided by vaccines. That said, Fauci added that there isn't a lot of clinical data on Mu at the moment, and said that even if Mu is slightly vaccine-resistant, vaccines still are quite effective against variants of that type. So they don't have a lot of clinical data. He doesn't really know what he's talking about, but he says vaccines are still quite effective against variants of that type. Okay. He concluded that U.S. health officials were paying attention to Mu, but don't consider it an immediate threat right now. right now. You have to look at the language. That's what he said about basically everything so far. So now they've named the virus in the news, potentially vaccine resistant, ready to go. It's ready to go. This is right after the CEO of Pfizer said that one of these vaccine resistant strains were coming, but don't worry because Pfizer said that they were going to have an answer to it within 90 days. They're going to have a new shot developed specifically for variants. And now all of a sudden, here they are. We're seeing people get infected with Delta, right? Who are vaccinated, fully vaccinated. If the boosters don't work, they're going to have another variant to blame pretty soon. And I bet you anything, it's suddenly going to spread like wildfire. This move variant that he says, we're paying attention to it, but we're not really considering it a threat right now. What do you want to bet that a few months from now, that's going to be all over the news? Maybe that's going to be the variant for the winter time. And even if it's not the one that spreads and people are still just getting, you know, generic COVID, how are we going to know which one we have, right? They're making assumptions about Delta, right? That's all they'd have to do anyway. If they told you that you had Mu and didn't have Delta, how would you know? What choice do you have but to believe these people? You don't. Right now, we are really behind Israel, and our government wants to play catch-up, I think, right? Israel is moving on to their fourth vaccine jab. They already had their third booster shot, failed to stop COVID. Now it's on to four. But here we are saying that our third jab is going to work because we're either just stupid or maybe even better than that, we're just good liars. From the Hill. Fauci says Pfizer booster shot likely to be approved by September 20th, Moderna to follow. Anthony Fauci on Sunday said the Pfizer biotech shot will likely be the only approved COVID-19 vaccine booster by September 20th, the date the Biden administration previously recommended for beginning to administer booster shots for all fully vaccinated individuals. When asked by guest host Weijia Zhang on CBS's Face the Nation if the Biden administration is still planning to administer booster shots starting September 20th, Fauci said that is still the plan in some respects, noting that Pfizer will likely be ready at that date, but that Moderna will still need some additional time for appropriate approval. We were hoping that we would get the both candidates, both products, Moderna and Pfizer, rolled out by the week of the 20th. It is conceivable that we will only have one of them, but the other would likely follow soon thereafter, Fauci said. And the reason for that is that we, as we've said right from the beginning, we're not going to do anything unless it's getting the appropriate FDA regulatory approval and then the recommendation from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. Looks like Pfizer has their data in and likely would meet the deadline, he said. Biden himself has been pushing for boosters every 5 months. Now, funny Fauci said with full FDA approval of this idea. From Business Insider, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced the resignation of two top vaccine officials on Tuesday, and reports said the two were leaving in anger over the Biden administration's plan to roll out COVID-19 booster shots before officials had a chance to approve it. Dr. Marianne Gruber, the director of the FDA's Office of Vaccine Research and Review, and her deputy, Dr. Philip Krause, plan to leave the FDA in October and November. Maybe they don't want to be a part of what they think is about to come, I don't know. Sources told Endpoints and Politico that Gruber and Krause were upset with Biden administration's booster shot plan. The administration announced last month that most people would be offered a COVID-19 booster shot about 8 months after the vaccination. One former senior FDA leader told Endpoints that Krause and Gruber were leaving because they felt that the Center for Disease Control was making vaccine decisions that should have been left to the FDA and were upset with Marks, the leader of their division, for not insisting on the agency's oversight. Now, following this revelation that two top people at the FDA felt so strongly that things are being rushed, now even the FDA and the CDC are starting to have second thoughts about this quick booster shot rollout. It's from another article. The Biden administration booster shot plan is facing another setback. Top health officials have told the White House they need more time and data before authorizing extra doses. That was from the New York Times. The heads of the FDA and CDC told the White House they may be able to recommend boosters for only some recipients of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in the next few weeks. The Times recorded that the FDA's interim head Janet Woodcock and CDC Director Rochelle Walensky met Thursday with Jeffrey Zients, the White House's pandemic coordinator, asking to scale back the booster plan. The FDA plans to convene its group of independent advisors to review booster data on September 17th, just 3 days before the White House's planned start date for rolling out boosters. If we're going to move in this direction, I want to see the data. Lynn Bata, a registered nurse who serves on the CDC's Independent Advisory Committee on Vaccines, said Monday morning. Dr. Paul Offit, a vaccine expert who sits on the FDA's Independent Review Group, has also repeatedly said he doesn't believe boosters are needed yet. The virologist said that he wanted to see data showing the risk of hospitalization and death increasing for vaccinated people to justify the use of extra doses. The White House, CDC, and FDA did not immediately respond to requests for comment from Insider. How shocking that is. This is an interesting and sudden pause to the plan, though. I mean, looks like Fauci and Biden are determined to get it done, but they are getting some pushback. Now, Woodcock has a history of fast-tracking drugs. We did a whole, half a show on her recently. For her to pause this, I wonder what data she has in her hands that made her rethink all of this. So, in some sense, it's good that we're seeing some of our pushback and our resistance starting to take a little bit of effect. And I think that's got a lot to do with how quickly and easily that we can share information with each other worldwide now. But the main thing is, we can see that their plans, their goals, it's not about health. It's not about getting the economy back. It's about control. We can look to other countries and see police beating people for not wearing a mask outside in a park. Surfers out in the ocean by themselves being arrested. Ridiculous. That's not science. That's control. We can watch Australia locking down their people because they found COVID in a sewer, or they've got 10 more cases in a city like Sydney, right? And we know it's not health. It's control. It's definitely not health when they tell us that only the vaccinated are going to be able to participate in commerce and that the unvaccinated will not be receiving medical care. We see what's happening there and around the world. We see the vaccine passports. We see them even here in New York City, Los Angeles, New Orleans. And we get what's happening. That's why we all aren't lining up to get the jab. And some of us have some pretty fair questions that we're asking. Well, with quite a bit of failure in the news and Afghanistan dominating the headlines, there's this story right now on Breitbart, and this is going to be our last one for the day. The Biden administration is seemingly shifting goalposts for the Chinese coronavirus pandemic. After months of then-candidate Joe Biden blasting former President Donald Trump's handling of the public health emergency, as they now are looking for what has been described as a manageable middle. In a Politico article titled, "Why Can't We Turn the Corner on COVID?" public health officials seemingly changed their tune and now surmise there is no quick and clear turning point ahead in the pandemic, according to the outlet. That represents a drastic shift from the narrative presented mere months ago, where public health officials presented vaccines as the answer to return to a state of pre-pandemic normalcy. That has not happened, as some states and local governments have reimposed mask mandates even for the vaccinated. But months after such heavy criticisms, officials hit a wall, unable to convince 70% of Americans to get vaccinated by Biden's original goal of July 4th. To date, 53% of the U.S. population is considered fully vaccinated, according to the CDC. All right, that's only 53% fully jabbed. That is well below their goal. And don't try to tell me that that's just ignorant people who are anti-vax, okay? I don't think there's enough true anti-vax people to fill a high school auditorium. There are plenty of people who are pro-vaccine, myself included, who just don't trust this one. We don't trust how fast it was made. We don't trust that the VAERS reports on the CDC, the VAERS, on the CDC website went from 30,000 reports every year to 450,000 and climbing, okay? I'm not afraid of a 99.95% survival rate. I just listened to the CDC report that at least twice as many Americans have had COVID than reported. You know what that does? Take the death percentage and cut it in half. Take the death percentage in every age category and have it. Well, sort of, you know what I mean. It's even less deadly than we thought. All of those numbers are exaggerated. We're told to follow the science, yet that science and these numbers keep changing on a day-to-day basis. I'm not looking at science. I'm looking at human nature. When I see their first reaction is to label people, to separate them, to put signs on their doors, tell them that they can't buy and sell, give them some kind of passport that lets them into a business while other people can't get in. Nah, I'm sorry. We've seen this enough already. We've seen this throughout history. We know where it goes. People know what this is about. We're not having it. Now you watch. We'll see what happens soon with the boosters, what side wins the struggle, if they're going to be out by the 20th or they're going to need more time. But in any case, watch for the escalation in the news and the spread of new variants like Mu. They can't keep Delta going forever. And as Biden likes to say, and there's a need, whether it's true or not, there's a need to project a different picture. All right, that's it for today. If you like the podcast, please hit the subscribe button. If you know people who would like it, pass it along to them as well. Have a great night. I will talk to you all again soon. Take care.